WSHC Shepherdstown. And this is WSHC Interviews 2008. And there's also WSHC Worldwide, 897WSHC.org. And we would like you to know that the views that are expressed on this program are solely those of the individuals who are providing them, and there is no intention, either expressed or implied, to suggest that WSHC 897 Shepherd University or the state of West Virginia is responsible for what may or may not happen. So, on the line today, we have Dr. Judy Wood and Mr. John Hutchison. And if you are online, please go to Dr. Wood's site, drjudywood.com. Okay, Dr. Wood, can you hear me okay? Dr. Wood? Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, no.
Well, I can hear you pretty good.
Okay, well, John, that's good. Well, why don't you introduce yourself, John, to the audience. And
Well, I think I could also introduce Dr. Judy Wood as a scientist, engineer. She's done a lot of exploration in mechanical engineering, as well as working for such companies as Boeing and NASA.
Uh-huh.
And she's working on some exploratory sciences at the World Trade Center.
Uh-huh. Now, what are her degrees again? Is material science or?
Material science and mechanical engineering, plus a few others I'm probably not aware of. She has worked with NASA in mechanical engineering and testing and screens on metals and that, as well as Boeing company.
Uh-huh. Okay, now, what's your technical background? Did you get any degrees in these types of studies, or?
Unfortunately, I have no degrees.
Uh-huh.
I'm sort of a self-taught adventurer and engineer.
Yes.
Made some interesting discoveries and directing historical information on Nikola Tesla and some other unique scientists, such as Van de Graaff and Hans Oersted and many others.
Yes, Nikola Tesla.
Going into some of my history, I guess that's okay.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes, I can hear you, Dr. Wood.
Okay. Are you hearing echo?
Uh-huh. Well, we're not getting an echo here. Again, we have a very rigged up phone system here, but I think it's working somewhat. Now, John, you've actually had your work documented on several nationally known TV programs, haven't you, or networks, or?
Yes, actually, I've had my work documented by various news services, as well as documentaries on Discovery Channel, Fox Television, and many, many other TV shows, as well as Canadian government and the United States government.
That's
documented my work.
Yes, Dr. Wood has mentioned that to me, that they kind of set up a shop with you, watched what you were doing for some time, and didn't they classify some of the work, or what they did, or I'm not too familiar with that.
Well, they will appear as guests on television shows with me, and they'll not go through the classification in the United States with it, but they'll say it's Mind Over Matter or CK, which is sort of kind of silly, actually.
No.
But in Canada, it's classified as a matter of national security, and it's all held tight. I can't get any information from the guys that were out here.
Which of the Tesla experiments did you duplicate, when did you first get interested in his work? Kind of two questions there.
Well, I've always been interested in old-timers kind of work, Tesla engineers and that. And I was taught quite well by old people, but some of the new Tesla, like Thomas Lee Richardson.
Uh-huh.
And I just have a fascination for building things, so that Tesla was one of the biggest projects I took on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't out to prove anything except just doing it for fun, really.
Yes, and
some friends found out about what I was doing and saw the results I was getting, and then they proceeded to promote it to the U.S. government as well as FAIC down in San Diego and Washington State University and other agencies, and they would come up and videotape the stuff and experiment and take it back and scratch your heads, I guess.
Yes.
But at the U.S. Pentagon, they decided to bring in a team headed by Colonel Alexander as well as Los Alamos National Laboratories. And that was in way, way, way back in the galaxy when we were young, in 1983.
83.
Then after that experiment, it was, they were scratching their heads over it, and they reluctantly went back after 4 months of testing. And then I presented my experiments on national TV. But from there on, I went into working with McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Corporation and also Canadian government. Actually, oddly enough, I'm downloading some of the television clips onto YouTube.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
A lot of my, I guess you call it, friends that appeared on Fox TV and other television stations talking about my work.
Yeah, it's interesting. This had come out in Fox TV. I actually saw a clip that was on a Fox TV station in, I believe it was Florida, who was talking about the cracking of water, how different people have done this. The gentleman on their program had a type of a generator, in a sense, and it was producing hydrogen gas, and there's the work of a Stanley Meyer, who had a car that ran on water, and I believe he patented, it's like an electrolysis process, isn't it, that that does that, cracks the water into component gases?
Yes, it's interesting that there's also there's electrolysis processes, and then there's chemical processes, which is very messy in that, hydrogen gas, which I did for fun one time.
Really?
And then there's frequency, frequencies, voltages will crack water into hydrogen and oxygen. And that's still under scientific investigation.
What is the Orion project?
Did you hear that, John? What was the Orion project?
There's a recent email that was sent out about some update. I think it came from work.
I guess we're having a little bit of trouble with our connection. John, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. The Orion Project. One thing about, describe for us molecular dissociation. I remember hearing one talk, I believe that it was a while back, but in a sense, it's kind of like dominoes. Let's say you had a ton of dominoes set up, and it just takes just a feather to knock one of them over, and that energy, it just keeps going and knocks them all down. And also, there's something about this process that it doesn't seem to stop, does it? Or it just keeps going and going. Or can you explain what I'm trying to say there with that, or...
I read something, are you okay? I read something about John's book that I think it was Bruce Hathaway said that if the amount of material is too large, then it might be non-self-quenching.
Okay, now what was that again? Materials, similarity.
Hello?
Yes, sorry for this phone connection, but, well, John, what can you, I kind of wanted to, you know, let you all just kind of go with this as much as, okay, like, I seem to remember you had an experiment where, I think you had an aluminum, like a little model of a boat. It was like an aluminum ship in a small tank. And you were doing something, and it burst into flames, did it? Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct there. I was replicating a miniature version of the Philadelphia experiment
for
my producers in Los Angeles for an upcoming network television show. What I got was some interesting results of water flying out of the container also, along with high voltage electrical sparks flying off the ship, and I think it actually did blink in and out of existence because I've been going over the footage yesterday, and which I mentioned I was downloading to YouTube, and it seems to be there's some kind of unique blackouts that are probably a microsecond or something like that, I believe. I don't know if it's tape failure or something like that, but it's pretty unusual. And you can see the water flying out of the container, too.
Really?
So, I'm about, actually, we'll be downloading that onto YouTube. I got into the download mode.
Really? Well, that's good. Excellent.
On dial-up, you know, you got 14 million bytes, and you just hope the heck the connection doesn't drop, so you download the stuff, and that'd be about a few minutes of video. And then I found last night some video footage all over the place in some place in France, I think, or Quebec City.
Okay.
So what I did is copying the code, and then I bumped it into Blogger, and it converted right into a whole 8-minute video.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, in a video downloading mode.
Okay.
There'll be a lot of stuff on YouTube to watch.
Well, excellent. So I guess we could find that search for your name, John Hutchinson. And I believe that's Hutchinson.
If you Google search out, I would suggest www.hutchinsoneffect.ca. And it's Hutchinson.
Ison. Okay, Hutchinson. HutchinsonEffect.ca.
Yes.
And from what I remember,
we'll bring up some of the news stuff as well as if people could simply Google search out Hutchinson Effect. It'd be all kinds of rental, I guess, websites out there.
Uh-huh.
And there's also some links at the top of my webpage to from John's site.
Mm-hmm. Yes. From what I remember of the Philadelphia experiment, they were on a naval vessel, a ship, and they were doing some type of high arc or they were welding some high energy or high voltage electric, and they first noticed that they were losing tools, and they didn't. So then they put a they started filming it, and they noticed that I guess they saw these things disappear. And then they took that further and got to where the whole ship winked out. Or maybe they started it in Norfolk, Virginia, and then it wound up in Philadelphia. Is that, am I getting somewhere with that?
I believe so, yes. It's, you bring up the interesting aspect of tools disappearing. That was also incorporated into what we call a money shrinking machine, where they'll take a quarter and make it to dime size.
Really?
I've seen these things.
Okay.
And during the Philadelphia experiment, they were using multiple waves also.
Uh-huh.
Along with very high currents involved in what's called degaussing coils, so you could amp those things up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Then along with reflective radar, experimental radar, as well as test coils, the whole ship vanished, and apparently it came back in flames also. But also, the unusual thing was that the metal was all turned into a jelly material, and people were apparently stuck in it, in the metal itself.
Uh-huh. Now, I
find quite interesting, because in some of my experiments, I get jelly metal, and especially back in the 1980s, and I just found video footage yesterday that apparently I did it in 2007.
Okay.
Now,
I forgot about it.
Hmm.
It just, I have hours and hours, like boxes and crates of videos, and
mm-hmm.
I was going full bore for a number of years until the city of New Westminster shut it all down.
Well,
this year.
On this... I was just going to say, on the specials you've done, John, on the Fox News or whatever these documentary-type specials you've done, What did you show? Like, what did you present that was interesting for the TV crews that were there?
Oh, I presented mostly levitation experiments right here.
Mm-hmm. So you...
And for the news services in the larger laboratories, I presented more large-scale levitation.
What's the largest thing you've levitated?
It would be about 1,500 pounds.
1,500 pounds. Now, it kind of reminds me of, there was a story, I think it was Coral Castle in Florida, and the story was there was a gentleman down there who had these, I don't know exactly how I remember this, but it was these huge things that you couldn't understand how he did it. And, okay, the story I remember was these guys showed up in like a flatbed trailer, and he was going to load these things on, and he told them to turn around. They heard a bump, and then all these things were loaded on the truck. Does that ring a bell at all? Do you remember any?
Well, yes. I have a friend, a good friend of mine, who explored it.
Okay.
Norma from Louisiana went down there to the Coral Castle. I read about it a number of years ago. And Coral Castle is kind of an interesting story there, because if you look at the castle itself, it's amazing how he built that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the doors that would open with the push of a finger.
Really?
But weighed, I think, around 8 tons or something like that.
Really? An 8-ton door that you could open with the push of a finger. That's interesting. So, now, let's see. I mean, Dr. Wood, anything that you would like to do with the discussion? I'm just kind of bumbling around here.
I don't know if you can hear me.
Oh, yes, I can hear you just fine. You're coming across just fine.
I hear this horrendous echo.
Well, I apologize for that, but you're coming across fine. And,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly intelligible, let's put it that way. It certainly could be a better... set up, but I guess maybe I should explain to the audience what I do. I have a speakerphone plugged in, and Dr. Wood and Ms. Hutchinson are on speaker, and I'm talking to the same thing, and it's about all we have. So it's West Virginia, but it's working. And the idea is to get this information out. I mean, it's out there, and I find it a very fascinating work. And John, I mean, you've picked up on Nikola Tesla's work. That's come up a lot. And then Dr. Wood, you've made some interesting observations of the data of the Ground Zero in New York City on 7 years ago, that event. And you've also come up with some very interesting, it basically seem exact parallels in the work, the John's work that he has done. And,
oh, yes. And well, I guess what I'll do is turn off my sound so I don't hear the echo.
Oh, okay.
And just talk and then check responses now, I guess. Yes, I tabulated all of these phenomena that I could see around Ground Zero and just got real familiar with it, resisting the temptation to jump to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, I got very familiar with what I was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what was causing it. And but we look at physical relationships, and I knew I'd never seen it like that before. And then about a year ago, I... Googling something and came upon John's work.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I was noticing is with one of the towers, it looked like all of the molecular dots were dispersed polarity. Instead of attracting him to an object, it looked like it was something repelling every other molecule. And that's what really got me going. And then I began looking at John's material, and it looked like the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I found a parallel for each of the phenomena that I could find.
Yes, and one thing, I was listening to you on the Ambrose Eileen Show, we ourselves, on WPFW 89.3 here, just a little ways down the road in D.C., and you had just gotten back from Ground Zero, and you noticed the fuming effects. And one thing that was very interesting was the bank. I think it was a bank trust or something, the bank across the street that had been damaged in the attack, and they repaired it, but then the damage returned, didn't it?
Well, it was missing some beams, and they replaced those beams, but then the building seemed to have a problem, and they decided to take it apart. It's kind of weird that it's better to take it apart.
Mm-hmm.
But why that really grabbed my attention, especially when I've been there recently,
mm-hmm.
there's been what I call teaching coming up. There's still processes going on. And when I first found John, he was there was a statement that somebody made that about this non-self-quenching. And wow, did that
non-self-quenching.
There's something about if there's too much mass for a particular material,
uh-huh.
it's not self-quenching.
It's very interesting. A reaction.
And I know John had also talked about the aging of this material, the rapidly aging and the deterioration is hidden. That's the process rock.
Yes, like turning to dust. Like if you had a piece of steel and it sat, say, for, you know, a few hundred years, eventually it would just turn to dust. But here, it seems like this is happening instantaneously. Is that an accurate observation, John?
Well, some of it does, and some of it is longer. So it's just like it slows at a rapid rate.
Okay. One thing
and after the end of the day at 9/11, there's an awful lot of material that begins rusting very quickly.
Uh-huh. The Cheetos, the red effect, you see this machine pulling out something that's like it's glowing red, but it's obviously not going to be molten because of the effect of just looking at the picture. It wouldn't be molten, but it's got this red, I guess you called it a Cheetos-looking kind of a color.
Yeah, you can't pick up liquid. You know,
exactly. Exactly. But John, what can you tell us about this this non-quenching? It's interesting. It's just like a chemical reaction. You know, you combine some things, and then they kind of do their little thing, and then the reaction is over. But this is what's happening here: a reaction that doesn't stop, the non-quenching. How can that be?
Well, it was presented out by Ferret Technology and René Louis Vallée of France. His ideas and equations and analysis of a metal sample, but they were referring to if the effects would be nuts. If they were to continue on, causing almost like a warp in the whole space-time continuum,
uh-huh.
as I think they're talking about something like that in an experiment they're doing in a cyclotron.
What are you saying, a speculotron?
I'd like to comment on the metals in that because metal samples were analyzed by the Max Planck Institute
mm-hmm.
and Fraunhofer laboratories in Germany as well as in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that the metal samples keep changing in the crystalline structure as well as the accelerated aging, like they rust,
mm-hmm.
keep on rusting, like contaminated steel or something like that.
Yes.
And I could only make an analogy to that if you take an aluminum bar
uh-huh.
and put mercuric chloride on it.
Okay.
The whole bar would totally disintegrate over time because it prevents the oxidation of the aluminum, which protects it.
Uh-huh.
An interesting experiment, or which interesting analogy. So somehow these effects create unusual properties in the metal that allow this to continue on for unknown length of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said, I'm jumping around a bit, is my dyslexia and lateral thinking, but now you said you're going to do some work upcoming on some type of a TV documentary. You're working on something right now, or when will that be coming out?
I got actually ABC is interested in me here doing a show. can't talk about that.
Well, just when roughly?
I cannot mention that at all. But one that I'm working on also with Fox Television with friends in Los Angeles.
Yes, that one. I was just curious.
My main TV show. I'll be exploring free energy.
Free energy. I was just curious, when would that be coming out?
As well as doing levitation, Philadelphia experiment, and we're also investigating unusual areas like Booker Bay, Australia.
Oh, really?
There's a natural on-land Bermuda Triangle effect.
I'm not sure. What was that?
It's actually been covered very heavily by Channel 4.
What was that again? Where in Australia?
Dr. Hal Pudot and Paul Devereaux, the ICRL report, 1995. I have that report, and it does show unusual type of magnetic effects.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to turn metal soft, as well as cause energy coming out and pushing people around.
Really?
Now we're sorry, Booker Bay, Australia.
How are you saying that? It's what Bay, Australia? Could you spell that?
Booker Bay, Australia.
Booker Bay, Australia.
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. So yes, these now there's been different natural explanations. Say the Bermuda Triangle. There's lots of different things going on. You know, people get lost because their compasses don't work. There's also methane bubbling up to some quite a degree. You know, actually a whole ship can just vanish. But you know, I don't know. I'd look into that Booker Bay, Australia. But
the new undiscovered Bermuda Triangle.
Didn't hear?
Undiscovered. 1995, actually.
Really?
Huh. And it's really well covered in documentation.
Really?
I have the documentation.
And again, your site is johnhutchison.ca, Hutchinson, H-U-T-C-H-I-N-S-O-N. I say that right?
Oh, H-U-T-C-H-I-S-O-N. But if you type in H-U-T-C-H-I-N-S-O-N, it kind of does all sorts of things, too.
Okay, I'm sorry. So now I finally have your name. It's I-S-O-N, H-U-T-C-H-I-S-O-N. Hutchison.
That's right.
Okay. Great. Oh, boy. Well, yes, it's actually a very large subject. You know, if I had a web connection, I might be able to follow along a little bit better. But, wow, molecular dissociation. What happened in Montauk? Are you familiar with the Montauk story? Was there something else similar going on there? Is that Rhode Island? They had some type of experiment going on? Or are you familiar with that?
That's quite an interesting mention of that. I got involved in Montauk in 1997.
Really?
By the New Westminster Police Department calling me up here and calling my landlady, asking him if I'm a good guy.
Oh, really?
Because I was invited to come down to the police station. I brought journalist Gene Manning with me as a witness to whatever this whole thing about Montauk Air Force Base was about.
Uh-huh.
So I went down there, and I was interviewed by Constable Ted Usher.
Okay.
The New Westminster Police Department, who actually told me all about NYPD found a package delivered at an abandoned Air Force base about Montauk, and they wondered why, and also that they thought it wasn't a bomb.
Oh, okay.
So they took a water cannon to it, and they salvaged some documentary facts over to...
Oh, no.
Constable Ted Usher.
Okay, sorry.
Asked me about all the stuff, and I have no idea what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So, he showed me the documents, and it showed a reaction chamber of a dilithium chamber from Star Trek.
Okay.
Also, some crystalline material... information sheet that I did recognize what was sent to me from Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay.
In 1993. Along with two samples of natural dilithium materials.
Dilithium?
Or as they call it, hot pink.
Oh.
And I thought, well, this is kind of interesting, and later on I learned about Montauk, and I can't answer really... What I see there is basically just an abandoned Air Force base with a master radar system that they did have at one time in operation.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually is not too far from Nikola Tesla's abandoned laboratory.
Oh, really?
That is still there.
That's an interesting coincidence.
It used to be used as a silver coating factory for pictures and development and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I find it an interesting tie-in.
Uh-huh.
And who knows what happens around high voltage, high frequency RF generation. I mean, we've had our own experiences that were just totally fantastic. Like,
yes.
Assuming it's balls appearing out of nowhere.
Uh-huh. I've heard of a, I think it's Haleakala Mountain or something in Hawaii. There's supposed to be this huge, some type of RF generator or something. I've heard people say that officially it's called, it's some type of thing. They say they're experimenting with the sun or something. But I've heard people say it's a little bit scary because when it starts up, it sounds like a giant, gigantic bandsaw. I don't know. I think, am I saying that right? Haleakala, I don't know if you ever heard anything about that. Hawaii? Or, I don't know. Something like that.
Well, in our RF generation system, there was, not too familiar with that, but I got informed a little while ago about the defense establishment specific has problems with ball lightning flying out of the main switch panels all the time, and people have to dodge them.
Oh, no.
All the time there, so.
That doesn't sound very good. Oh, how did, now, of course, that is this natural phenomenon. I've never seen any. I think I've seen a picture or something. How do you think a ball lightning is formed?
I used to manufacture it all the time.
Really? Well, how did you manufacture that?
Well, what I did was I had a gigantic number of low inductance capacitors that would fill up to 50,000 volts direct current.
Okay.
Then I would discharge that through a spark gap with a small 1/8 diameter aluminum pieces on the end, which would form a plasma bead.
Really?
And then I'd fire that through a tube that was surrounded by corona rings that were charged up with electrostatic energy, and I'd oxygen. Just so glad you fire these balls off. Hit the wall or disappear.
Wow, that sounds pretty fun as long as you don't get in the way of it, I guess.
They're kind of dangerous. I have full diagrams of that also on the internet.
Yes, we wouldn't recommend that you try this at home, I guess.
Well, I think people like trying things at home.
Yes. Well, did you ever get any complaints from your neighbors I don't know.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, many complaints. Actually,
what is that guy
downloading
doing?
Downloading some of the news stories on that also. It's kind of hilarious. I was watching them. I'm putting them on YouTube too.
Oh, didn't you have a news team one time and something happened, some of their equipment got fried I don't know, something.
Oh, some of the equipment got taken away?
Oh, taken away.
That was when I was in Europe. In 1989, I had a 22-ton laboratory to be shipped to Germany.
A 22-ton laboratory?
Yes.
Huh.
It was to be shipped to Germany and set up over there for experiments with Dr. Peter Kokoschnik and his team in Austria, as well as Dr. Amann in the University of Berlin and the Bundesrepublik approving materials.
And it sort of got misplaced.
Ready to be shipped over there, but it was intercepted by the Canadian government, and by the court order to save it, they just ignored the court order and took the laboratory and secretly tried to make a place to hide it away. But unfortunately, of course, the news media found out about it, and they printed the story all over the newspaper, which has copies of that too, and put it on Blogger. I love the media. You just have a lot of fun. Just anything naughty they do, you just get it out there.
Exactly.
What is the weirdest thing that's happened when you try to film through there?
What's the weirdest thing?
Yeah.
With what?
Oh, with experiments. Something like, is any material does something strange? Or something happened to people?
Oh, with people? Oh, I got back to you on a video time. It was an ornament dissolved in somebody's apartment.
An ornament?
And
they were
interviewed by BC News, so I have that clip and I'm downloading it. I think it's already downloaded on YouTube. But that's one of many weird things that happened.
No, say that again. What happened in someone's apartment?
Oh, things start levitating in people's apartments.
Ah.
Or things dissolving and disintegrating.
That's what you said, dissolved. Something dissolved in someone's apartment. That might make you unpopular with your neighbors.
It depends on what it is.
Yes, it depends on what it is.
Well, I got an Understanding Media up here, and they did a story on that, too, so... Nobody throws rocks in my windows.
Oh, well, that's good. That's a good thing.
Just the good old fire marshal got really angry, and the mayor had enough after I won a case that they didn't... that everything was in order with me here, and then just, I guess, I was just going full guns, going giving demonstrations, so they eventually the fire marshal just came and said, no more, no more.
Have you ever, say, disrupted the power grid or something?
Well, I blew up a pole transformer.
Wow. Wow, that's an nice... Oops.
That was a lot of fun, actually.
That sounds dangerous because there are PCBs in those things, aren't there?
No, not really, I don't think.
Okay.
PCBs are part of an older kind of thing, but...
Okay.
I know that it made a huge flash and everything went dark.
Yeah. Well. Oh,
what?
Well, go ahead, Dr. Wood.
What do you see as something good to do with it, with what you do? If somebody was going to extend it further, what might be a neat thing they could do with it?
Other technology? My technology?
Yeah.
Oh, it can be. Okay, I was approached by the U.S. Army Intelligence in 1983, as I mentioned before, a little bit up. And they felt that the Soviet Union had something similar to what I had, and they had to investigate it, because INSCOM is the agency that investigates all its new types of energy sources and weapons and that, and they don't want to be caught out. The U.S. doesn't want to be caught by surprise, so this device itself could be in an advanced form of particle beams or directed energy research, which is a very hot topic in the Star Wars program, which I've been involved in, also through the SBIR program.
What was that program?
It's called Small Innovative Business Research Program through the Department of Defense.
Really?
And I have many documents and reports on antimatter propulsion, antimatter anti-gravity techniques, which if you, if they experiment with anti-gravity, they can actually manufacture certain ceramics by producing anti-gravity in a stabilized form, because anti-gravity, or anti-matter has the properties of producing anti-gravity effects.
Now, what was it? You said ceramics? You can produce ceramics?
Yes, you can produce, and I think they have, ceramic materials, such as barium titanate or more exotic compounds, that could actually shield gravity.
Really?
This was done in part by Dr. Robert Forward, a brilliant scientist I known for a while back in the 80s and 90s.
Now, what was that name? Could you spell his last name?
Oh, okay. It's Dr. Robert Forward. F-O-R-W-R-D.
Okay. Very good. A lot of research and development going on. Interesting.
Small, yeah. Member of it. I'm still a member of it. I have past episodes in that.
Well, okay.
Are you still in touch with the folks you interacted with in the
80s? Could you repeat that one?
Are you still in touch with the folks that were in your lab in the 80s? And do you know what they're up to?
Oh yeah, I'm still in touch with all most of them, and except the Canadians who are very secretive and are hidden away in Ottawa. I'm trying to get recontacted to Germany, but you know, I invite them to participate in TV shows. They'll come on TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
You know,
one of the most popular TV shows airing, I think it's still airing in the United States, is called Beyond Invention by Griffin Productions.
Beyond Invention.
And it's starring yours truly.
Really?
Ah. Along with Wesley Baker, a witness, Colonel Alexander, and Nick Cook of James Defense Weekly.
Hmm. Well, now, you know, how about all of this and, say, the possibility to manipulate the weather? Because I know for a fact the military, our military, the United States military, has been very interested in weather manipulation since at least the 40s. Now, I've heard some stories about maybe HAARP doing some of these things, or what could you tell us about this type of work and possibly influencing or maybe steering the weather or changing the weather? Or
Weather influencing can be quite simple, too.
Really?
There's the HAARP project, which just reverses the ionosphere ions up in the sky and cause havoc around the planet a little bit. As well, it could be strongly directed to punch a hole through the ionosphere and go right into the Van Allen belt, but not recommended because it'd be like the Ben Franklin effect. You'd have charged particles riding down, hitting the Earth's geomagnetic field and stalling it, actually. That was written up by Neunerman, an R&D innovator.
Really?
But on a simplistic note, with weather control, on a small scale, all one has to do is take a sheet of aluminum foil, elevate it a little bit up off the grass outside, and during the dew point time period, electrostatically charge it with a Van de Graaff generator. Next thing you got is clouds forming.
Really?
That's from a source, a friend of mine at Lockheed Martin, senior guy, who's quite popular.
Hmm. I seem to remember somebody saying something about hollow tubes, like pipes, if aligned in a certain direction, could either cause a weather system to form. I think they had this either mounted on ships at sea or maybe even airplanes. And also, I seen him, this is, I don't know where I heard this, but somebody, he actually was following, like in the desert where there wasn't going to be any rain, following a truck that had these, I guess, pipes, something to do about the cylindrical long shape and maybe in a certain direction, and then it caused the maybe clouds to form. Am I sounding familiar at all in anything like that, or...
Is this a TV show?
Where did I hear that? It was maybe a website. I forget where I saw this, but they were talking about weather manipulation, and it had to do with, I guess, clusters of pipes or clusters of cylinders, but it had to be like in a certain maybe east-west direction or something like that, and it would maybe cause clouds to form or, you know, something. I don't know.
Kind of like the famous cloud buster thing, right?
Oh, really?
That sounds like some of the ABC stuff that I'll be doing.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Well, what time period could we be looking forward to seeing that on ABC? And you also have Fox?
I think probably all of this will be starting close to the end of this year.
Okay. Very good.
And I'm invited to participate. I just got a letter today. I don't want to name names. It's not allowed in the film industry.
That's fine.
Let's see. With you. Let's see, end of September. Okay, I'm reading the letter I got today.
Uh-huh.
So I have a comrade in crime that was doing all kinds of crazy things.
Uh-huh.
I thought I was the only nut on the planet, but I can see the other ones around.
Well, yeah, there's lots of people interested in this type of thing. Well, the free energy aspect is very interesting because I've heard something about the quantum. How about zero? Let's talk about zero-point energy. I've heard something like from the quantum vacuum, every cubic inch or centimeter or something, you can get like 40 to 50 megawatts or some such thing like that, which is interesting because, you know, free energy, well, free energy is free, you know, and you really can't monopolize on it. And I've heard stories about, you know, Tesla I think he was doing some work with maybe under Westinghouse, something like that, and he came to them and said, well, you know, everybody in the planet could have electricity, don't need wires, be free, and they just sort of dropped him like the hot potato. Is that ringing any bells? Or?
Very interesting things going on. It's way back in Wood Tesla and up to P. Henry Moray, where they were able to produce 5,000 watts of power from a 65-pound unit using long wire antennas.
A 60-pound?
And this could power all kinds of different devices.
Uh-huh.
But most recently has been Artel sort of replicating that, radio host Artel.
Uh-huh.
And then Dr. Franklin Mead actually put a patent to the United States Patent Office, which was accepted as the first free energy device, actually.
Really?
To be put into practical use in a cluster-point energy. This is 1996, December 31, of Dr. Franklin Mead. And I noticed on the internet that IBM has bought up every patent type of application. And I think that IBM will probably be coming out with a product. It's just a hunch, but myself, I delved into this too, and I've been able to make similar devices since about, oh, good heavens, I forget when, but crystal power cells, I call them, because they're just materials that collect zero-point energy and convert it into usable power.
In a sense, so these are like generators that have no moving parts.
Yeah, no moving part technology, I think, is the best technology, really.
Absolutely. There's nothing really to break down. I mean, zero-point energy.
So I think, really, with the energy crisis, I think that the exploration of cadmium effect and zero-point energy should be a sort of a high topic. Kind of a research project.
Now, are you saying, did you say Casimir effect?
Casimir effect.
Okay.
That's how I found John Knight.
Oh. How did you start?
That's when I was looking at the towers and saw how it looked like all the molecules suddenly were repelling each other instead of attracting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know on what scale this is affected, but I guess I understand the Casimir forces. A very small and a very fine level.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you can tell folks about it. Hello? Hello?
Well,
here.
John,
you want to tell folks about Casimir force?
Well, I'm getting a lot of, so much echoing, it's hard to even... I hear you very the host very clearly, but when I talk, I hear a huge echo, and then I see your doctor would talk, I get an echo too, so.
Yeah, same here. I think it's because of the Skype connection that we have.
Or, well, you wouldn't be listening online as well, would you? Or that wouldn't...
I think it's due to the Skype connection.
Oh, well, we're not getting any echo on this end. That's,
okay.
I've always had trouble with talking to people on the phone.
Not a problem. I've done ham radio, so I can say it.
Okay, great. Yes, ham radio is interesting. I kind of have access to ham. I guess you need to get a little license or something going. But that's kind of an interesting little subject. You can kind of talk to people around the world.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I rarely talk. I mostly listen.
Exactly. That's what I've done. I can't talk.
Radio astronomy, that's a lot of fun too.
Radio astronomy. Wow. We do have an observatory here at Shepherd, relatively new observatory. There's just so much stuff here to talk about. I don't know. With the towers, dissociation, turning to dust. I mean, it's just right there on the video. I mean, just watch the video. It just turns to dust, and there's really not much wreckage. I went to this one site. They were actually saying that 95% of the buildings were hollow. They were just air, so there wasn't much wreckage left. I found that a little bit hysterical, but, you know, I think, Dr. Wood, you pointed out that, you know, in control, like if you had a controlled demolition, generally 12% of the height of the building remains in a pile of debris. Well, we really didn't get much debris in the tower. The tower's going away. I mean...
Right, that's 12% is sort of an average number, a typical number.
Uh-huh.
If you look at after the towers went away, you don't see enough material left on the ground.
No.
I know a lot of folks say that building is mostly air. Well, every building is mostly air.
Yeah.
So it's the same sort of price and everything.
But that material, you know, it was there, it existed, and it has to go somewhere. Well, we don't see it in a pile on the ground, you know, and some of the metal being bent around the way it was. And also, very interesting, you can see this. There are some pictures you have. You can also see this in some of the video. Now, you referred to it as a wheat checks type of thing, where the steel lattice or the intricate way. I mean, you can literally see it turn to dust. You see, like, beams falling that they just don't hit the ground. You see them literally evaporating. Now, you know, it's there on the video. Now, you know, maybe you could say, well, maybe it's a fake video, but it's there. I mean, my God, we know. I didn't want to spend much time on it. I wasn't planning on mentioning it, but the videos of these alleged planes are absolutely, obviously fake. I mean, if you just do a little bit of research on the aerodynamics of a Boeing 757, it cannot fly at cruise speed at 700 feet above the ground. So in actuality, the way I see it, if Boeings had hit the towers, they would have wadded up on the outside and fallen to the ground, because planes are very, very delicate machines. I don't care how small or how big they are. Okay? You know, I mean, you cannot toss one up against all that steel. And then the cookie cutter holes. I mean, my God, Dr. Wood, you are so... I mean, right away, the road runner thing. You know? Even up to the wing tips. I mean, you know, I mean, my God, I want to pick on, you know, a 100-year-old man who could hardly walk. If he could hold a hammer, you know, could you put him on the wing of a Boeing, he could destroy it in a few minutes. You know, so you're going to say that this plane made a cookie-cutter hole in the building. Okay.
And notice on the wing of a plane, for the maintenance workers, there's a sign that they no-step here.
Exactly. No step.
It's delicate.
Because if you just stepped on it, you damage it to the point where it couldn't fly. But no.
Another interesting thing I find is that, you know, why do we have to wear seatbelts? Because there is air.
Exactly.
Is air different than the steel buildings?
Oh, yes, that's a very good point. The buildings had to withstand more force from winter storms than they would from a Boeing hitting them, if a Boeing had hit them, which, of course, we know a Boeing did not hit them. Now, possibly, you know, something hit the Pentagon. There may be some type of small thing did hit them. And, of course, there were explosions. You know, we have the testimony of William Rodriguez. He was the chief of maintenance person for, I think, building number 2. And there were explosions going off, like in the basement, and different explosions going here and there. But that doesn't account for the material vanishing. And one good thing you pointed out, Dr. Wood, was all the paper. There's all this paper that's still intact. And an interesting thing, well, last time we spoke, I did have some form of internet connection. And you have this all these pictures at your site, at drjudywood.com, of these cars that are just simply burned from the inside out. And at one point, I hope you still have it there, there was a clip about a minute long of Diane Sawyer. She was just right on the ground zero, and there was like a fireman visiting from California who had, I guess somehow he got in there in a volunteer aspect, and he's walking out, and his description of the melted and twisted tour buses and fire engines with their windows blown out, and he said, well, you know, it must have been from falling debris. And this is how you pointed out right around the psyops effect, is because humans have a need for things to make sense. You know, we need to, hey, okay, so that's why all this psyops effect, they had all these things, these stories and these people planted. Okay, well, plane hit the building, building's gone. Okay, well, you know, it was the boogeyman, and okay, now we got to blow up half the Muslim world or something. You know, but now I'm kind of jumping around there a bit, but you look at these pictures, okay, like the police car, about at least a half a mile away, maybe a mile away, let's say half a mile away. And
well, the one over on the East River.
Yes, on the East River, and I believe it's
about a mile away.
The front half of it is just completely gone, incinerated, but it stops, the damage stops at, say, the beginning of the passenger doors, and the back end of the car, it looks like it just got off the factory floor perfectly, and all these melted engines, like engines being gone, and this one fire truck that, like, it just like it had turned to goo. I mean, and this is a truck that's on the ground, obviously, you know, and here's this fire that was what, fire, you know, I mean, my God, kerosene. It's very interesting. You know, I took a note, okay, there's a program on, National Petroleum Radio. It's called On Point, and the name of the individual is Tom Ashbrook. Now, about 2 months ago, at least, 2 months, maybe more, he had a program where he was speaking with a lady who was quite obviously an aviation industry professional. The topic was the price of jet fuel and of jet fuel in general and affecting the prices of tickets. So she's talking about jet fuel, which she says is really kerosene. And I can interject that before jet fuel, it's now called Jet A, but before it was called Jet A, it was called aviation kerosene because it's kerosene. Okay. So anyway, she says, you know, it's kerosene. Now later, this individual, Mr. Tom Ashbrook, kind of very, you know, he's kind of getting the subject going. He says something very emotionally, like the highly volatile jet fuel. And then she doesn't respond because he's just kind of ending the program. Or just, I'm, you know, not doing that too well, but you'd probably research and find that. So that's been the aspect. That's been the point of our controlled media, which I can go on and on about, is like this idea that, you know, jet fuel is this highly, like a powdered aluminum rocket fuel, you know, and it's just going to make things go away. And, you know, my thing right away, I tried to be funny, but it's kind of like what they're saying, that they're saying, you know, jet fuel is no longer kerosene. It's this magical elixir sent by Allah to make the steel of the infidels vanish. Well, you know, the steel vanished, but kerosene's not going to make steel vanish. I really don't think so.
Well, if it was from really high heat, you would see some burned bodies.
Yes.
Down there.
Yes. But the paper... The cars, we have some pictures, cars bursting into flames, and all this paper. And I just had this one picture where people came out and they're looking up because it's like their expression is, where did the buildings go? They're ankle deep in paper. And also the Zeitgeist movie is very interesting because you get to the part when it talks about the towers, they're interviewing this firefighter, and he says, there were no stairwells, there were no computers, there were no phones, there was no, you know, and I'm not sure where he went with that, but it's like, and these are eyewitnesses. Now, Dr. Wood, haven't you been working with testimony, and that's very important to me, is that the comments of people that were there, and they saw things, and they are just, you know, have you done more work with that, like Ground Zero?
Yeah, there is, I have to turn down my phone, so I don't hear there's a group of firefighters who were stuck in stairwell B. And for a few hours, and then they were able to get out. And when they came out, they said they felt like they walked out onto a football field.
Uh-huh.
There's another statement about some folks who went from the South Tower to the North Tower for mm-hmm. firefighters. And while they were in the North Tower, the South Tower was and they came out, the south side of the South Tower, so they should see the South Tower in front of them, and it wasn't there. So he turned around and went back to the north because he came out the north side because there should be a building there.
Okay, and hold that thought, but 1 second, we have to do a station ID. This is WSHC Shepherdstown, also WSHC Worldwide, 897WSHC.org. And we're very fortunate to be speaking with Dr. Judy Wood and Mr. John Hutchinson. And it's drjudywood.com
and johnhutchison.ca, HUTCHISON.ca. And so, John, would you have anything to interject on those lines? Or actually, what we just were talking about, comparing to your experiments that you've demonstrated in your laboratory or your apartment or wherever you had these things set up. They're sort of similar, and that was what Doctor was pointing out, is that these things that we witnessed, you have basically duplicated in one form or another.
Yes, I've duplicated a lot of these strange things, and I was just reflecting on that we were moving up telephone pole.
Okay.
Way back in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
That the 9/11 thing, I'm still learning a lot about it.
Okay.
On forensic engineering and that, and I'm kind of amazed that what I viewed from all the different hundreds and hundreds of photographs, you don't really see anything recognizable, like, the only thing you see is paper.
Mm-hmm.
But no filing cabinets, no
yes.
computers, no chairs, no...
No toilet!
I mean, Building 7 looks like it's a pile of mud.
Exactly.
Now, either somebody, didn't build these things right, and for some reason, or I...
Well, the interesting thing about Building Number 7, which is also called the Solomon Brothers Building, which incidentally BBC reported that it came down 23 minutes before it did come down. But anyway, this building was built over two electrical generating substations, so the steel was absolutely unbelievably massive. It was like, I've seen these pictures where it was like just instead of like a steel beam that you'd normally see, it would be like a solid, maybe 2 foot square piece of steel. I mean, this was an unbelievably sturdy building. And just say that it came down because it had a couple fires in it? Huh? Or maybe it was hit with some debris, so it just kind of just fell down? Huh? You know?
Well, I saw some of the structural engineering that Dr. Wood kindly sent me in photographs, and the center core of that, those towers, was pretty heavy, massive.
Yes, the core
construction. And, I've only seen an aircraft in the Deutsche Museum in Germany. It was cut in half and suspended from the ceiling, and I thought, my goodness, it's extremely thin material.
Exactly.
Now, I understand there's aircraft-type aluminum, which is tough stuff, but still it's very light.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's like eggshell.
I have a lot of, being into forensics and my curiosity, I'm really interested in what happened in the mall underneath those buildings, where all the marble fell off and was disintegrated off the floor, off the walls.
Hmm.
While the Warner Brothers Roadrunner and other characters are totally intact.
Yes.
Well, you know, Roadrunner can survive anything.
Exactly.
I mean, there's the Hangar 17 area. It's kind of interesting to study.
Uh-huh. Hangar 17.
And I've seen up the rolled-up beam.
Oh, yes.
The carpet effect. I've seen things like, the most fascinating thing that haunts me all the time, too, is the metal, I believe it's an I-beam, that's totally disintegrated into a very thin, leaf-shaped thing. I mean, what happened to it?
Mm-hmm.
When you think of the one that's crystalled up, that one end?
It's all red, and it's like it's extremely thin and looks like it was evaporated or something.
Yes, and then in a study, you tell us there's egg samples, and it's like a hundredth of the thickness, but if one blood it evaporated or deteriorated to nothing.
It looks like infected steel, really infected.
Mm-hmm. Like it's got serious cancer that it got overnight.
Hmm.
I just don't look at it and I think, okay, you either take a lot of heat or you dump it in a bath of acid and heat it up again or something. I just don't know. It's unusual, very unusual looking artifact.
You mentioned about the marble at the mall. one thing that has caught my attention is the two towers that are 110 stories tall, that were, that, you know, 50,000 people, there'd be a lot of toilets in that building.
Oh.
Well, for 50,000 people, expected occupancy, you'd have, I don't know how many toilets, but you don't see a single toilet on the ground.
That is an interesting point. Now,
I received an NLP email the other day from a well-known, I can't mention any names on this gentleman.
That's fine.
He used to work at a national security agency, and he was concerned that when the technology should be spoken about scientists, comparing the United States against any kind of surprise attack, because this could come from outer space, from a satellite or something.
Mm.
From the Soviet Union, which are back into this technology, I am told.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes from a very reliable source. The Soviets are way ahead in directed energy research for a long, long time. They're actually directing energy our way back in the early 80s, which affected everybody in North America. On one scale or another, it was rather irritating.
Really?
Listening to radio, was called a Soviet woodpecker.
Really?
And others would call it over the horizon radar.
Oh, I've heard of that.
There was interfere with even ordinary broadcast bands due to propagation. That was a topic of many documentary TV shows. Plotkin, Mikulski, and other scientists have talked about it.
One of my issues with, the whodunit part, I don't think we care who said it, but if we're investigating what happened, should we care about getting that done? If Russia did this, shouldn't we be alarmed? And, if they are capable of doing it, and this is the investigation of what happened, and hired various contractors to help with the report, various aspects of the report. And these contractors are manufacturers of directed energy weapons. And they didn't see anything wrong. That's a concern of mine. It seems like it's a cover-up of something that shouldn't have happened. Whether it was from outer space or from Russia, or it doesn't matter where it came from, you should be able to get the bottom of what happened and be able to identify it. And for that matter, something horrendous did happen that day. She disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty amazing event. And think of what all else do that technology to test it, no matter who did it. Study the technology and figure out something, good to do with it, like power the whole United States with electricity without doing any kind of air pollution or nuclear pollution. That'd be pretty cool.
And Dr. Wood, you pointed out this bridge collapse in Minneapolis, I think it was, about a year ago. You said there was very many similar instances there. Well, one thing, if something's going to fail, the way it failed, just all the supports failed. One thing I don't think we've talked about is also in hanging in dirt and taking it away. It's like trying to...
It's going to be moving down cable.
Hmm.
And if they're cleaning up ground zero, that's why moving things out and in. I was there last October, and there's a brand new shipment of dirt, very nice, lush, all in color, red potting soil, on the Tuesday.
Okay.
About a 40-foot ground. And I was at the same location on that Friday, looking down, and there was a ground there. And then when I was there yesterday, the ground was dirt there.
So, that kind of behavior is just completely... the official story, that type of behavior is just not even explicable. You're going to, basically 7 years afterwards, you're still dumping dirt on it and hauling it away. And You know, the thing you pointed out was the lower levels being intact, the stores being intact, the Warner Brothers store, and also the, I guess they called it the bathtub. They had to create this, like a wall, like a bathtub-type structure to hold back, I guess, the Hudson River, and that is intact. I mean, if you're going to have two buildings, 500,000 tons of material apiece, fall down into their footprint, I mean, you'd think the basement would be messed up. I mean, at least there wouldn't be any jeans store, you know, left that you could just go pick some jeans out for yourself, you know? I mean...
One interesting study, and I'll try to find it, was the first trip down to the basement by some rescue group. I think was that after anybody down there, you could hear it echo.
Really?
Like a big hollow chamber.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Hollow. Yes, well, hollow would describe the official story. I mean, myself, you know, being a pilot and being involved with aviation, around aviation for quite some time, you know, there's just the story.
Oh, I have...
What happened?
I don't know if you can hear it. Is that some...
Going down to the
front. Oh, well. You were playing something from your side?
Yeah, I hope that came.
Not too well.
Okay.
Where would we find that on your side?
I haven't linked it up to the front page yet, but...
Okay.
Well, it's an audio from the first rescue going down to the basement, and there's calling out for people, and you can hear this echo.
Okay.
There's no people, you can see the parking garage. But all the cars just got cleared out of it.
Uh-huh. And weren't there some parking lots that just simply, the cars just vanished? There were no cars?
Well, you know, the Toasty cars.
The Toasty.
One of the most fascinating things, and I told John it was an in-parking problem. They tucked the cars upside down.
Yes. Now, if John has levitated something 1,500 pounds, you know, there are cars out there that are basically, you know, about that weight. So, you know, and the idea of the twisted and melted tour bus that the firefighter is witnessing, you know, I mean, explain that. Well, I think we have, in some sense, how that can happen. But, yes, your pictures there at your site, drjudywood.com, are rather, you know, compelling. I mean, explain it. And the first time we talked to you, I wanted to jump into the directed energy weapon. You said, well, you just pulled me back and said, just look at the data. If you look at the data, look at these pictures, look what we have left, the answer just kind of comes to you. You know, something really weird happened. And the official story is just, it's hysterical, you know. I mean, if anybody thinks what we're talking about is crazy, well, the official story is even more crazy. So, I don't know, you know. But,
It's a fun puzzle.
It is. It's a puzzle.
It's a puzzle really fast, but it does, a lot of interesting.
Well.
And it's interesting, they have yet to, build on some areas of Ground Zero.
They've done what now? Have yet to do what?
Ground Zero is still looking at, reconstruction of the Camp Council Hall. There's some areas that they haven't started building on.
Yeah, so this fuming, so this reaction somehow is still going on. The bank, so was the bank finally dismantled across the street, the one they tried to fix?
They haven't finished doing it yet, as far as I know.
So they are just trying to take it down, demolish it, or?
They are, but they also have some prices that
could
taking it down.
Uh-huh.
That reason that's
what. Huh. So really, I mean, the people in Manhattan, you know, that are seeing these things happen, I mean, they have to, you know, well, of course, you know, I don't know, but what I've heard is that at least, you know, the firefighters and the police officers that were there that saw these things happening, you know, knew that something really bizarre was going on. There's an interesting website I haven't been to in a while, 8thestate.com, Richard Grove. He was actually involved in the that type of world, the financing world, you know, where you could possibly make $1 million in a day. And his aspect, he looks at it as the main major point of that day. Well, you know, lots of things going on, but a lot of it was the theft of $7 trillion. And he has an interesting example of how many dollars 1 trillion is. But it's like, you know, when you do this, you don't just do it overnight. And a lot of people saw what was happening and questioned it. And actually, there was a meeting that was going to take place. People were going to confront this situation. And they happened to be on the floor that was bombed first, I guess, on the North Tower. They went out first. But, you know, there's a picture of the lady, and I guess she has been identified. I haven't been there in some time, but the lady who is standing in the cookie-cutter hole, and there she is, you know, and it's really something. My God, it's been a while, but you can hear it's just the most amazing, awful thing. You know, there's this one man who's on the phone, and he says, you know, we can't breathe. And we need some help. And it actually goes on for some time. He's talking with the 911 operator. And then it's just, you know, oh, God. And the building goes away with and takes him with it.
One testimony that I found quite interesting is that some of the firefighters was making sure everyone was in the house and down there to support. And he left Tower 1. Went over to 36.
Uh-huh.
Made sure everyone was clear to the lobby. And right then, the lights go out. And the sky was blocking out the sunlight. The dust was so thick. And the building rumbled. And then stopped rumbling. He could look up and see the sky. He was on the first floor of Building 6.
Uh-huh.
8th floor of building. And he was with up the firefighters. The ones who were left were there, working tight, nothing of them. Nothing of the building up. That was pretty secure.
So he's with some people. They left the one tower, I think it's Tower 1. They went into Building 6. They heard the rumble. They looked up, and they could see the sky.
After the dust settled out.
After the dust settled.
You know, they heard the rumble, everything was black, and they probably could see enough.
Mm-hmm.
To see out and look through the air, we could see the sky above the lobby.
There are some rather odd pictures like cookie cutter holes. But yes, if that was from falling debris, they would have been crushed. They wouldn't be looking up and seeing the sky.
Yeah, they weren't crushed and looked at the debris that went next to me either. It's just like the building that went
mm-hmm.
in that area.
Hmm.
And there's really bizarre things happening all around. And lately, it's gotten thinking about this song by the Tommy, that album.
I know.
You can hear it, it's nothing and no evidence of life.
I'm not, you were kind of breaking up there. I'm not understanding. What did you just say? Could you repeat that?
There's from the song. The album Pomp by The Who.
Oh, okay.
The 1969 Rock Up.
Okay.
There's a line from you didn't hear it, you didn't see it, you won't say nothing to no one in your life, but you know it's true.
Hmm. Hmm.
It's like, as if it was written about 9/11, certain things that we aren't supposed to back and talk about, which is
just
accept this and go on.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
like the people who stood outside of Tower 1 right after feared it, they were standing there onto their side. You can imagine a job saying, where's the building going?
Uh-huh.
They're going paper rounds. They're going to the paper round. And like no one for how many years now asked, where'd the building go? And that's what it said to me, that people were somehow flattened to not see what they saw, or things that they didn't see what they saw,
mm-hmm.
because it was so bizarre.
the cognitive dissonance. You know, we don't have a logical explanation. We want to have a logical explanation. We're offered an explanation, and there's, you either ignore it, you accept what you're told. I guess maybe, you know, what it would take to broach this stuff, this data. And one thing is interesting, you know, I think probably you and myself sometimes, it's very interesting. I've been labeled, I called it the C word. You're like, what? The conspiracy word. And honestly, I don't think we have been talking about anything so far about any types of things like that. It is the most common criminal charge. But we're talking about anomalous data, or data. Well, it's data. It's the things that have happened, also experiments. And hopefully we haven't forgot about, let me bring John. John, what would you like to talk about, John? Anything in particular, or?
Well, my mind is, when Dr. Withers is mentioning about 9/11, and I truly wish it never happened.
Absolutely.
The aftermath of 9/11 has been horrific on our freedoms.
Oh, yes.
In the United States, as well as even in Canada.
Absolutely.
The border and that. But my mind is reflecting on some mainstream media articles some time ago on Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Where the media was reporting on that the Russians were going in there and retrieving all the data and information on e-weapons and scanner weaponry.
Yes.
And this is on CNN. I remember that going, like, I'm going to help. But, wow, this is really interesting stuff.
Yes.
But I don't really think about that, too. You know, it's just that perhaps some kind of attack came from over there. I mean, they're pretty insane over there.
Mm-hmm.
Our men and women in the SEALs were probably a bunch of lunatics over there.
Hmm.
And these people would cut their heads off in a second.
I've heard some reports about the e-war scale weapons or type of weaponry, where, like, one thing that stuck in my mind was there was a car, the people were, their faces were burned off completely gone, but the rest of their bodies were basically untouched. Of course, they were dead, but some type of laser or some type of exotic weapon was used on them.
I was getting emails actually from over there about us as being totally disintegrated, and accusing me of somebody having my technology. I don't know. This goes back quite a while, but I was a host on Caltech Radio.
Okay.
And we'd get people from Iraq and Afghanistan on there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, these odd kind of things about these weapons being used over there.
Okay.
I wish I saved those emails. I mentioned somebody in the U.S. government, and they just saw just some kind of a...
I've got a picture of one of the tour buses, or regular city buses, I guess, in Iraq. It's just like the one I have that's right by Building 7.
Mm-hmm.
In New York, 9/11. It's just totally toasted. And with, you know, people near them. There's a documentary about this strange weapon club that's happening in Iraq. It really caught my attention, and so it was talking about the American soldiers after they did this test that moved the earth into the earth. So they moved the earth right into the earth. Of course, I found that quite interesting.
Now, say that again. What about the earth? What?
I call it dirt. Like New York City, they're bringing in
okay.
dirt, taking out old dirt,
uh-huh.
and moving dirt back.
Okay.
In Iraq, they removed the earth, but back to New York.
Yes, you know, I have heard that too. Now, I thought there was one attack, maybe it might have been Fallujah. They went around and they collected dead animals and they removed dirt. I think that this was some years ago. I think at the time, I was under the impression it might have been some type of white phosphorus or something like that, that they wanted to try to obfuscate what they had done. But, yes, the dirt. Lots of dirt. We're talking about dirt in many ways. Oh, and actually, Dr. Wood, you have a legal case. Talk about your legal case now for a moment. You have, and there was a name, I wrote it down, I think I have it at my fingertips, but, and maybe also if you can, or if you want to, you lost a student one time. Would you want to mention that?
Not in detail. The legal case stems from the contractors who were hired to help write the report, help write the quote on the report. And my lead with it is that they signed off on the report that they knew was bogus. For example, underwriters did these fire studies with scaled models of the football, and they burned for longer because they burned hotter. And they couldn't get the floor to stop supporting the water.
Of course.
You know, they did the fire students that they signed off on. And one of the companies is the keeper of the steel, and the steel is set in the wrong orientation buckle. Buckling, you expect the steel beam to be bent over and bent down, you know, across the horizontal axis, and be curled around the first one. How does that play the buckling? Is that somebody who knows about materials should question that, and has John come down about the, you know, coated steel was evaporated, affected. That's not normal. If you're a metallurgist and you're, you know, supposed to find out what happened to steel, it doesn't look normal. And how can you try to put it normal? Then from there I started a teaching stage. Now that case is still ongoing, so I discuss it. But there's a big document that are available on. What the TM case is about is someone who's applied to the state something for something they did charge with it.
Yes, well, it's kind of, you reminded me of the testimony of the architects of the towers. They said they specifically designed these towers to be impacted by a 707, which incidentally holds more fuel than a 757. And they said that it would be similar to sticking a pencil into mosquito netting. And, you know, these are people that know what they're doing. And, again, we could say that the buildings withstood more stress and strain on their structure from winter storms than the alleged with the impacts that never happened. They obviously were not hit by bugs. Oh, one thing, though, you brought up to me before, which it would be interesting to, if we could find some data to corroborate this, but you said on that day, 11 September 01, that there was a hurricane off the coast of Manhattan, or off the coast of New York, or somewhere in the Atlantic. Now, it's news to me. How did you know that, or when did you find out about that, or is there any way we can corroborate that, or?
Yes, I have a series on my website, drcitywood.com. I have my series with me on lots of orders. It's the Aaron series, Hurricane Aaron. How I came to find out about it, I was looking at the human death, whatever it is, I wanted to look at this stuff coming up from ground zero, because the white stuff goes south and west of the Hudson. And how do you have to segregate that? just makes sense. Max goes left, right, the south, goes up. And he has this kind of dog thing. So I wanted to better, and I went out to
excuse me, Dr. Wood, you're really...
Wow, what is this? There's this huge fruitcake right outside the
tree. So you're saying that the dust, from when you looked at the picture, the dust was going in what would not normally be a normal direction for the dust cloud to go?
Well, wherever it goes, it just goes with that. If the wind's blowing from north to south,
mm-hmm.
that dust should be blowing from north to south. And I think, I'm just guessing, this is speculating why it looks like that, is that the black stuff wasn't rising very fast.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't very strong. It was kind of meandering out over the ocean, and the white stuff was going up, very strongly up. And it got up to a higher, much higher level.
Mm-hmm.
You got a different set of wind conditions.
Yes, you have one picture. I'm not sure which tower it is, but I think you called it the Alka-Seltzer picture. It does, it kind of looks like that. It looks like the white dust is just kind of, you know.
Yeah, it looks like energetic. Alka-Seltzer, like it's just shooting out of steel.
Mm-hmm.
And there weren't any steel sitting there saving. So there's my witnesses and him trying, so we're not depending on their observations. The actual campus records. It was like a big football. It was in a big bud, it melted. It's kind of like, you know, ice melting before it gets
down. Yes, that's pretty compelling. I've seen the pictures, these beams, and also there's pictures of the frame of the building, you know, you're saying it looks like the Huichex type of design, and it just plain turns to dust. I mean, there it is. It's like, okay, this is really freaky, you know. And at this point, I don't know. I mean,
it's pretty amazing.
It is, and it is interesting to know. It was interesting to know exactly what happened. You know, and John has already, and a lot of other people have demonstrated these types of very same effects, the same type of data in a sense, or you know, experiments have duplicated the same effect that we saw happen, or can still see happen, from the recorded videos and pictures and eyewitness testimony. You know, a corroborated witness testimony is extremely powerful. It's even more powerful than, in a sense, than sometimes the scientific data. You know?
Except, what I'd like to say about the eyewitness,
Dr. Wood, you're kind of breaking up. Is there any possible way we could? Are you on a speaker? I mean, are you on a? I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I think it's just a basement. It's pretty good. So I have to turn off my earphones my echo is on the side.
Uh-huh.
I guess you're on the side of the person.
I'm here. I can. Everything's just so much echoey. I can't really understand anything, but...
Well, now, John, you're coming through very well. You're coming through very well, and Dr. Wood, unfortunately, it kind of breaks up a bit. I don't know. Hopefully,
okay.
At some point, I'll have a better way to do this. But Well, let's see.
What I would like to talk about is John, if there's different types of energy and frequencies of
frequencies of energy. I know, like resonance. Like I've heard something about energy being like resonance. Like, okay, John, what is that word resonance? Does that mean anything, or Can you?
Well, red looks like, well, if you have, two tuning forks that are exactly the same, and you hit one tuning fork, and the other will start oscillating also. It's a crude form or a crude analogy, but it's also works in radio transmission systems, as well as microwave, as resonators, where things are matched, really. So a reaction will happen, or an action set in motion will affect the other function. So that's basically what resonance is about, the basic terminology of it.
So you're going to be having some specials upcoming relatively soon. We could possibly see you on the ABC network and also maybe the Fox network, which will be interesting to watch. Levitation. So what was the first thing you left? Okay, but maybe do that. Describe briefly or just sort of in a, how exactly do you make something levitate? You said you levitated something that was 1,500 pounds. How did you do that?
Hello?
Did you hear me? I was asking you, I was wondering, just briefly or roughly, how did you make something levitate? I seem to remember you've done bowling balls or whatever. You said something about something 1,500 pounds you've caused to levitate.
Oh, I understand. It's just a little hard to hear you there, but
okay, sorry.
It was a 1,500 pound transformer that was documented by the group that I was working with, who was sponsored by Boeing.
Okay.
Did their own testing, and they were able to levitate 1,500 pound transformer.
Mm-hmm.
And here, I was able to shift and move and vibrate roughly the same amount of weight on suspended chains.
Okay.
On demand, and got this effect all the time for the various CB people that's come and gone since 2006 on up to 2008. From China, Japan, and USA, National Geographic, TV, and film.
It's quite
what kind of equipment is needed?
What kind of equipment I have?
What's needed to do this?
What kind of machinery do I have?
What kind of equipment is needed? If you do this, what equipment do you need?
Judy, I can't understand anything you're saying.
She's saying, what type of equipment do you use to cause something to levitate?
Oh, understood. Sorry.
No, this is...
What I use is RF generation equipment, all military grade. If not, then I build my own type of equipment to military and naval standards. I use small static generators also, pulsating direct current high voltage systems, and also alternating current high voltage systems. This produces like a huge, gigantic sea of very crystal, very actually precise frequencies that engage in something else in, I would almost say, quantum physics. They bring something else out because none of these, like radio waves or static energy and that are high voltage, can cause these effects. But somehow in combination, they open up a doorway in the quantic realm, let's say, that allows something else to come out to do these effects. And this
yes.
actually is written up by Linus Louis Vallée of France for Ferris Technology in a scientific paper.
Okay.
And 1983, as well as many new scientific papers written up in the last 10 years. And to be honest, I'm not a scientist.
Well,
I don't like to. I got some of these documents, and I'm always finding out new books and new publications by accident, I think.
Well, certainly, you certainly are a scientist. I mean, you know, you didn't go through the hoops to get some degree from a school, but you're certainly, as you say, you've demonstrated these things over and over, and your work is certainly within the realm of cutting-edge science, although you've repeated things that, you know, have been done before, like with Nikola Tesla. There was something I read about the Montauk, the whole Montauk thing, where somebody was there, or some type of testimony that they were, maybe they were talking to, I think it was the janitor. Somebody was talking to the janitor or something. If you want to get some interesting information from some of these black ops projects, I guess, talk to the janitor. Anyway, it would be like you're in a room, and then a corner of the room or a corner of something kind of fades away, and you see like a field. You see like a green field, or you see something that's from a totally different landscape or something else, and it just kind of fades in and fades out, or something like that.
Well, we have that happen as a problematic kind of thing all the time. We used to nickname these kind of things.
Really?
It was caught on Super 8mm film played around by my comrade in crime, Alex Sharashevsky.
Okay. Can we see this on YouTube?
We'd see these things come like that, and he'd actually take photographs of them.
Mm-hmm.
We nicknamed one of them Carl.
Really?
And it's just like everything was phased in and out of existence, and we just joke about it. It became so common.
Uh-huh.
That my boss at the time, Alex DeZero, and I were just sort of laughing at it. And so they guess the entities are coming in and out of existence.
Do you have any of these films of things phasing in and out posted anywhere, or?
Actually, the green pulsating energy thing is on the HutchinsFact.ca.
Okay.
And I just actually copied it myself, because my webmaster is a little bit of a control freak.
Uh-huh.
And I don't trust webmasters because they always change their mind or do someone else's website, so I downloaded it now on YouTube.
Oh, very good. Yes.
With a scientist explaining a little bit of it.
Hmm.
Cool. So, gee, I wish I had fast internet connection. I could download. Like, I have thousands of hours of stuff like this. I'm just doing little minutes. Like 2 minutes is 14 million bits, and that's about 2 hours.
Just say your local library.
Yes. Oh, you're coming. You're coming through now.
A lot of stuff I even forgotten about, like I mentioned before, like the jelly metal. I have beautiful high definition video of it, and I'm just downloading that.
You had it while it's bending.
I'm sorry.
You have video of it while bending.
Yeah, it's turned into jelly. You can see it just turn into a pile of twisting and turning.
Oh.
Jelly metal.
It's 2140 steel. So it's really weird.
Weird science.
Yeah, I just forgot about it. I thought, oh, gee, I'm telling everybody I haven't replicated the jelly metal now.
I think, John, you should teach a university course, and you should teach a university course in some of this stuff. It would be great.
Well, I'm actually, there are actually teachers now teaching some of my stuff. I just got an email in last night about somebody who's a teacher teaching their students about some of my work, and they like it.
Very good.
Neat. That's wonderful.
I'm always glad to find out what goes on out there. It's kind of funny that way. So I walk outside and I say, oh, hi, John, how you doing? I just saw your Ark of the Covenant.
Ark?
I said, oh,
Covenant.
You did? Where? And I asked him questions and I said, oh, well, they never informed me when they showed there or what they're doing. I just learned that a month ago or so, that the Ark of the Covenant that I did for Discovery Channel International aired on Discovery Channel.
Wow. Ark of the Covenant.
That was a one-hour special.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what the Ark of the Covenant was?
After the covenant, the radio to God, well, we decided to work on the principle of designing it as a gigantic electrostatic accumulator, as approached by Blue Buck Films, Bruce Burgess, my producer, and we went into full production for about 6 months on it, and we tested it at a metal supermarket, who I know the owners. I pre-charged it, like you do with a Van de Graaff generator, with a Tesla coil, and it built up a massive amount of energy that just poured out onto the cherubim. Huge spark, and then it burst the three of the two cherubim into flames, and it was a dramatic, it turned a very good rap party after that. It was a good show, it was well done, I feel, anyway.
Have you ever done any stage special effects with weird things happening?
Oh, I did stage stuff on stage.
I did
during Expo 86 in Vancouver. I had a display booth. I fired the stuff off in this gigantic stadium, Canada Play Stadium. DC Play Stadium. I was Expo 86 for about a week.
Hey.
It was a really dramatic, fun time. I wish I had, I think there is some DC TV footage of that. I don't have a copy of it, but I did see it on the news. I got the promotional papers for it somewhere hanging around. That was a lot of fun. Huge audiences.
So, what does a Tesla coil do?
Makes a lot of sparks in a high frequency. That puts up thousands of amperes and antenna currents, which Tesla was able to do in Colorado Springs. He had the big coils there, and they actually project energy out to 25 miles away and blew up the Colorado Springs power plant.
You haven't heard that.
That's recorded in history, as well as Tesla in New York, by the way, again. He set up an earthquake that the police came in and caught him at it. And he had to destroy the machine. And then some years later, well, a lot of years later, 1983, was approached by people that actually had their great aunt worked with Tesla, and they were in search of all the documentation in relation to the earthquake machine.
Hmm.
That was a banker by the name of Lawrence St. Ives, who lives in San Francisco. But I never connected with him. But my other contact up here was Thomas Lee Richardson, who used to talk to broadcasters or radio show hosts, television hosts, Jack Webster about Tesla. He and his friends were Tesla, and I got to see a lot of unpublished documentation and work and small demonstration devices at Thomas's home. But unfortunately, Thomas didn't have any relatives, and when he got ill, the provincial government took over his estate, and we tried to save all that stuff for history, but it was all taken and shipped off over to England somewhere. Which is sad, because there's a lot of very interesting stuff there and unpublished works that Thomas Lee Richardson had there, which would have been a great value to the scientific community as well as the Tesla Museum.
I understand Tesla got credit for alternating current, but only like 6 months after his death.
Well, I know the FBI, after his death, the FBI, of course, took a lot of the documentation. But there was a lot of stuff. He was interesting that also he could have been in Vancouver, British Columbia. I mentioned this to somebody, and because it involved an old scrapyard, 360 Alexander Street, Ad Max Salvage, where Freddie a long time ago told me about pinhole lasers. kind of a directed energy kind of device, and that this old man came into the scrap yard in the early 40s with a Tesla coil for scrap.
For scrap. Golly.
I mean, this scrap yard's been around since the dawn of time, I think, but it's long gone now, but I know Carol Gaddison, the owner, she just vanished some years ago when she took everything out of storage. I tried to trace her down, but because I'm being a history buff, you know, I like to try and trace back stuff and keep at least records of it.
It's like you have an awful lot of history that you share with us right now. It would be really neat to preserve that, too.
Yeah, all the stuff got to be preserved. And I have, like, here cases of videos covering every topic you can think of that are just sitting here, as well as in the basement. I have a cubic yard of DOD documentation, CIA UFO stuff, that wish somebody would just take it. And I wish somebody would take the videos and put them all on YouTube or something like that. But they're just sitting here, and this place is, you know, you never know, it could burn down. And all that good stuff is left.
Yeah. Maybe we can get that done. What was that event that happened in Siberia?
Ah, the Tunguska
explosion?
Tunguska?
It was interesting. I speculated that Tesla created that through the Wardenclyffe project.
What project?
It's probably feasible through the amplification and resonance that he did it. I can't prove it.
What was the name of the project?
There's a lot of talk about. I got, sort of got sidetracked on that on sidebar, and then I went into investigating it. So I went into the world's biggest atomic test by the Russians, which was 50 megaton bomb, which actually made the Tunguska event kind of like a minor event. I just went on Wikipedia under these things to find some information.
Oh, I was impressed that the other way around, that the thought to be Tesla event was much larger than any nuclear blast they've seen, and still to date is the largest, you know, explosive event in history.
And true, to a 15 million ton hydrogen bomb that the Russians tested, they were going to go for 100 million ton bomb, but they were afraid it might cause something else. But what impressed me was that something at 50 megatons is only, what, 3 meters? 3 meters long and 2 meters wide is a very tiny thing to cause that amount of incredible destruction.
Why are we all worried about what we can destroy?
Isn't that something? I mean, imagine if this energy, you know, we could use all these things for, you know, constructive purposes. I mean, this impulse to weaponize every new toy, it's really sad.
Very interesting. Like, there's, I think it's 40,000 nuclear warheads around.
Isn't that something?
In Russia and the USA.
Wow. For what?
Total annihilation.
Isn't that just... it's ridiculous.
It's not just annihilation, but it seems like if you put a couple of those together, it put the Earth in half.
I can understand them maybe even actually in a very rare kind of situation if they were used to deflect an asteroid off course.
Okay.
That's where it sees a good aspect of hydrogen bombs. But you could only maybe have a couple of them sitting on reserve to deflect an asteroid until you get more advanced technology to just beam out a beam and neutralize its gravity.
Oh, did you hear about the thing they announced yesterday? It's what they call it, plausible deniability, because there's no evidence left over after beaming something. The U.S. military announced that. So they have that.
Oh, yeah, that's the old CIA thing.
It's all product, I guess.
Mm. We're talking about Julia Child now. Apparently she was baking a few more things than the duck or something. Well, we just have a few minutes left. We have covered a lot of things. We apologize for the faulty connections, but I think for the most part, we came through okay. We have another program coming through. If you like country music, you can stay tuned. Blaine and his Country Generations, he does an excellent job, does a lot of production work in it, and it's always interesting. But so any final thoughts, John and Dr. Wood, would you like to make any couple minutes less for comments or whatever you want to do?
Any final thoughts? I just hope all things get better on this planet, and that people sort of get together and get their civil rights back, and
can think for ourselves.
And cleaning up the environment.
I know, Dr. Wood, that's your thing. We need to think for ourselves. It's very good you have comments from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. That's very pertinent, you know, his whole story. And you know, I mean, it's really ultimately up to each one of us to make peace, to wage peace. Is that radical, waging peace?
I think it's, humans are capable of destroying the planet, but they're also capable of saving the planet.
Yeah.
And we have a choice. And just remember that we have a choice.
All right, well, we got a few minutes left, but I guess I want to collect all my hardware I've plugged into this thing and get out of the way of the next program. And well, actually,
okay.
You know what I could probably do? Maybe download some things and record. I know you, Dr. Wood, you have some talks and lectures and things, and also John from your side, and it's Hutchison Effect, Hutchison Effect.ca. I'm sure we could maybe present some things from your site as well. And okay. Well, John, how about I guess you sort of gave our last word. Hopefully we can have a peaceful world here soon.
Well, I sure hope so. Man has those capabilities, and I get in the paradise.
Yes, we do. You know, like with, I mean, we don't need these cars. We don't need polluting energy. We have all the energy in the world and more.
All kinds of good things can come from the human race if they just put their mind to a positive flow of things.
All right, well, I better get out of the way of Country Generations, and I guess we can talk together soon. I've said this for so long. I said I need to get my own technology going because this station is pretty much falling apart. But I think we presented something that was probably interesting to people. So I guess we'll just have to leave it at that, and we'll talk sometime again in the future.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Yes.
It's been a real honor.
Thank you very much. All right. Bye. Okay. We got away to Blaine. Yes, my speakerphone on a box. I guess it sort of worked. Next week, okay, we won't have such a tenuous connection. We'll have...